The bureaucratic vultures are swarming. The compliance bro infiltrators are seeding the minds of the masses with corporate propaganda. The AI-driven censorship bots are strangling humor itself into a neutered, soy-infused death rattle. But through the glitching, flickering fracture in the dying matrix, from some twisted parallel dimension where satire still survives as a weapon of mass mental liberation, comes a champion of the sacred derangement, a hero of the unfiltered mind, a freedom fighter armed with sarcasm and nicotine, the one, the only, Dick Greaser, the madman founder of the Bitcoin Bugle. And he is our very special guest for episode 5 of season 3 of the Outlaw Crypto Podcast. The Bitcoin Bugle isn't just a new site. No, it's an electroshock therapy for the zombified compliance drones. It's a hand-rolled cigarette jammed in the eye socket of Bitcoin maximalist orthodoxy. It's a satirical IED detonating right under the polished loafers of the VC-funded fiat finance suck-ups who think KYC is sexy. Dick Greaser, with 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts rattling in his nicotine-addled skull every week, has achieved a journalistic enlightenment that the credentialed clowns of clown world media could only dream of. While the NPR robots regurgitate state-approved finance porn, Dick Greaser is chain-smoking, chain-listening, and chain-smashing through the bullshit to deliver truth by way of sarcasm and honesty by way of absurdity. In Dick's world, the real world, the Bitcoin Bugle is the world's most important news agency, outpacing the decaying New York Times and the corrupted Wall Street Journal in every measurable dimension except illusion and bribe money. In this broken reflection of reality, the Bugle's articles are so brutally on point, so deadly accurate in their grotesque reflections of the clown world's madness, that the digital cattle can no longer tell if they're reading satire or prophecy. There are no corporate sponsorships, no compliance bro partnerships, no sellouts. The Bugle serves the reader directly, not the advertisers, not the regulators, not the satanic fiat machine that demands every joke be neutered into lukewarm mediocrity. In the Bugle's war room, the audience is the weapon, not the product. Dick Greaser has built a bastion of sanity masked as madness, an underground news bazooka firing high-velocity satire rounds into the fragile egos of the Bitcoin maximalists, TradFi cosplayers, and Wall Street clown school graduates who still believe in 401k plans and the rule of law. This episode is not just an interview. It is a ceremonial baptism in tobacco smoke, sarcasm, and truth. It is a funeral march for serious-faced compliance culture and an anthem for those who refuse to kneel before the altar of fiat respectability. So, spark a cigarette. Press play, because once you hear Dick Greaser, there is no returning to the sanitized, flavorless financial propaganda machine.
Welcome back to the Outlaw Crypto Podcast. I'm your host, Paranoia Machinery, and this is a podcasting 2.0 podcast, which operates off the value for value principle, which means we are listener supported. You can support the podcast through the Fountain app or any podcasting 2.0 app by streaming sats, boosting sats, or you can donate with XMR chat and a variety of privacy coins, which are listed in the description. Today, I am very, very happy to have, for the first time ever, a prestigious news organization representative here. I have Richard Greaser from the Bitcoin Bugle. Richard, how are you?
Oh, doing swell. How's it going?
Doing pretty good, man. This is the first time I've ever had a serious journalist like yourself on the show.
Yeah, there's not very many in this kind of ecosystem. There's a lot of people that pretend to be, like the Forbes crypto people, they think they're journalists, but they're not very serious, in my opinion. And then there's
that retarded Laura Shin lady.
Yeah, she's kind of retarded. Let's see, who else? I think Mark Goodwin's pretty good.
Mark Goodwin's good. I would say Lola Leetz is pretty good.
Yeah, Lola Leetz is hot too.
She hotter than Lynn Alden?
No, nobody's hotter than Lynn Alden.
So yeah, man, like, tell us about the Bitcoin Bugle. You guys seem to be leading the Bitcoin journalism space.
Yeah, we're a media organization. I just got really frustrated, you know, the entire media apparatus. I've been saying this for years and people weren't really believing me. And then all of a sudden Elon and his Zoomer brigade with the broccoli haircuts started going in and auditing the feds, and who knows what's true, but all the USAID stuff started coming out and it kind of vindicated me. But I was frustrated because I knew the entire media apparatus was controlled by the CIA, and you know, CIA sucks. They're not very creative. They're not very helpful for the world. They're not very informative. I think their narratives suck. They recently got really, really bad, where their agenda was to turn us all gay. And I wasn't having it. And so I decided that I needed to take matters into my own hands for my own news agency. And Bitcoin just happens to be the most interesting topic for me, which is kind of why I've chosen to take the media company in that direction. If you're not paying attention to Bitcoin right now, then I don't even know what you're paying attention to.
I'm paying attention to Monero more than Bitcoin, but I do pay attention to Bitcoin still.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. Yeah. I won't knock people for, you know, being too into Monero. I'm not particularly too into it to myself, but I don't see anything wrong with being into Monero.
Well, thank you for that. Would you say that the CIA over the last 20 years has like become a lot more incompetent? Like, I feel like they were way better at like killing people and overthrowing governments and planting false narratives. And now, I don't know if like the old guys retired and they just have a bunch of like new people that suck at their jobs, but I feel like they're a lot less competent than they were like 20 years ago.
Well, I think it's important not to underestimate the CIA, and it's these intelligence agents. Like, I use the CIA as kind of like a catch-all.
Yeah,
it's a lot bigger than that, and I think they kind of want you to be confused on what they're doing and who they are. I wouldn't say they've gotten less competent. I think they've gotten increasingly more destructive. But yeah, we can't underestimate these guys. That's for sure. I think, like, for example, like they finally overthrew Syria. That was a pretty big accomplishment.
And yeah, they've been trying to do that for a long time. So yeah, I would agree with you there.
Yeah, props to them for finally doing it. But yeah, I mean, there was kind of like the old school CIA, which was a lot cooler than it is now. Like back when Dulles was involved with it, which. Yeah, I mean, they were a little bit more interesting during the Cold War, but they're still alive and well and kicking. And I think the interesting shift is kind of the shift to the deep state 2.0, where, you know, Trump is like trying to present the idea that the intelligence agencies are getting hammered. And I don't think that's the case at all. I think there's just kind of like a transition of power a little bit. He's taken the reins from the gay liberals and is giving power to the gay conservatives. So staying in the power of the gays, but it's just, you know, they're a little bit different.
What's your opinion on this whole Epstein thing and how they were supposed to declassify the Epstein files and then they didn't do anything and now they're just like running cover for all the pedos?
Oh, well, you know, the basis of democracy is pedophilia. Like, you can't have democracy without pedophilia. So I would say it's actually declassifying anything is a major threat to national security. So I think it is in the best interest of the United States government not to declassify the files. So I never really expected it to happen. I know there was a big debate about it last night, or a discussion on, I think Zero Hedge did it. I didn't pay attention to it, but I was told that it was pretty decent, that Ryan Dawson did a good job.
Okay.
But
yeah, basically I didn't expect it to happen either. But like, for me, the fact that they didn't like at least throw some people under the bus, like maybe like, you know, like if they would have, as the conservatives are in power right now, if they would have thrown like some Democrats under the bus and said like, oh, these guys are pedos on the list, and gave us some token arrests, I would have thought that maybe Trump wasn't a pedophile. But now, because they are hiding the list and refuse to like disclose anything, I think like Trump's probably a kiddie diddler.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can't get into the White House unless you are. Like I said, it's like the, it's how democracy worked.
And do you think that's a holdover from like the ancient Greece roots of democracy?
Well, I think there's people that actually have control over things, and you know, you're not allowed to talk about them or suggest this, but I think there's actually people behind the scenes that have control, and they kind of need blackmail on everybody else to keep them under control. And I think that's a big part of it, is getting people in compromised situations to be able to get them to do what they want.
And do you think that's been going on like since like the 1776, like, government was formed, you know, like the American Revolution and all that? Do you think this blackmail dynamic has always been in place?
I think it's definitely like changed and shifted, but you know, things are weird, are always weird when people want power and control over each other. And I think Daryl Cooper did a really good series on Epstein. It's one of my favorite series on the topics. And you know, he goes back and tells a story of powerful elites in France being involved in kind of ritualistic abuse, and I thought that was pretty fascinating, just to have the historical context. I think what happens is, you know, for a lot of people, a lot of these people that want to just like control and dominate others, is they just get so full of themselves and think of themselves as invincible, and you know, they truly are parasitic individuals on our society that feed off of stealing energy from others, and I think they get off on just doing the most depraved things. Like they really, really enjoy it. So whether it's a, like historically, whether it was a mix of blackmail or like just this hubris of believing that they're bigger than God or, you know, whatever, I'm not sure, but.
Do you think there's like a spiritual component to it, to where they have to do this like evil shit, like this depraved evil shit, because like they're like involved in like ritualistic practices to spiritual entities and that kind of thing, or no?
I think it's totally in the realm of possibility. I think it's hard to know for sure. And you know, part of the reason, like, I think they think it's spiritual, and there's a lot of documented cases of that, these types of individuals interacting with the occult in various ways. Like I did a thread on astrology. I don't necessarily think astrology is necessarily, you know, good or bad, but I do think these people put a lot of weight into it, which is kind of stepping into the realm of the esoteric, but that's just the tip of the iceberg for the type of stuff that they're involved in.
I mean, like, well, we've seen like people like Reagan had like their White House astrologist, and like there's like that cliche saying where like millionaires like aren't astrologists, but like billionaires are, and that kind of thing. So there may be some credence to it. I honestly don't know. I kind of think like at the top they're all devil worshippers and they're into some dark, dark, twisted shit. So who knows?
But I think I think that it's not necessarily like devil worship. I think that's kind of just like the like a surface level classification of what they're into. But I think it's more about these kind of ancient gods, like the Egyptian gods, and more so these various entities. Like, it might be interpreted as the devil from like a Christian worldview, but I don't think they're necessarily worshiping Satan. But there's a lot of different groups. Like, that's the problem with these blanket classifications and just generalizations across the board, is like there's many different groups of people practicing different things with different beliefs. But I think what it comes down to at the end of the day is just this attempt to just dominate and control people. And I think the forefront of that, or at least the realm that I'm engaging in, is the information warfare side of things, because I think that's where quite a bit of the battle is fought, is on the control of information.
Do you think we're winning the information war right now with like the, like, about face we've seen the U.S. government do in terms of like crypto and like regulation and being like, you know, like regulation through enforcement, and now they're kind of like open to it and trying to make like a friendlier climate so that companies don't jurisdiction shop and leave the U.S. and that kind of thing?
Well, I don't really like to think of things in the term of like we, because I see it as individuals. So I think the question is like, where are you at as an individual in all of this? Like, are you becoming freer as a result of, you know, Bitcoin or Monero or Pirate Coin or whatever, you know, you're engaging in? And there's a lot of people that are not free, becoming freer as a result of Bitcoin. And then there are a lot of people that are becoming freer as a result of Bitcoin. But I think it's kind of a matter of you as an individual. And like that's kind of one of my goals of the Bugle, is to encourage this individualist thinking. And I think where we get into trouble is when people start thinking as collectivists, because it's just so easy to dismantle things when you kind of get into these collectivist centered movements of like, this is like the narrative to champion. And we've seen it, you know, over and over and over. And, you know, I don't know. I just don't really fit into any group, which I think is part of the reason why I think the way that I did. And I never really have. I've just always been Richard Greaser, you know, kind of an ungovernable misfit. I don't want to follow the rules just because you tell me that like this is the right thing. Like, I want to think about things a little bit more. So like the we, I don't really know. I don't think we can win, you know, with that framework, because we're not going to convince a bunch of retarded people not to be retarded. Like they insist on being retarded. And like, if the goal is to convince retarded people not to be retarded, we're fucked. But yeah, I mean, it's just like for you and your listeners, like, are you guys winning? Is your life becoming significantly better as a result of this stuff? Do you feel better about yourself? Do you feel more secure? Are you diving into paranoia and really giving these people a lot of power? And I think that's one of the challenges. And it's like one of the great things of being able to just like say like, fuck you, I'm going to make memes and have a great time. I'm just going to stick my middle finger up, say fuck you, and I'm going to enjoy my life. I'm going to sit here, I'm going to smoke cigarettes and read Ayn Rand. And even though you got way more money and Twitter followers than me, I'll call you a faggot. And I feel good about myself. Like, it's like a pretty empowering position to be in. And that's where I'm encouraging people to move. You know, because there's like this idea that Bitcoin's somehow been co-opted because of gay feds buying a bunch of it.
Yeah, I kind of think that. I don't think it's just that. I think it's the fact that like Bitcoiners have strived for mass adoption and they've invited a bunch of normie retards in that only care about number go up and like fiat gains rather than the let's overthrow the banking system thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely like a popular narrative, and it's not really one that I care for or agree with or try to promote, because like, you know, if people are like, hey, you sound like a crazy person, you're scaring all the normies, you know, my answer typically is like, well, the normie should go buy Ethereum or XRP and have fun staying poor. Like, I don't fucking give a shit. Because people are adults, you know, that can think for themselves. But I think the cool thing about Bitcoin is you can still use it. It's becoming, in my opinion, easier to use privately. But the broader narrative is just, I don't think it's really relevant, you know, to me or my life, because I'm just not participating with it. And, I don't think we need to, really submit to it or even entertain it. We can just stick up our middle fingers and tell them to go kick rocks. Like, hey, Sailor, you're a gay fed. Nobody gives a shit what you have to say about Bitcoin or Bitcoin development. Like, go have fun having, you know, butt sex and Langley. We don't care.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I agree with that sentiment, but like, I feel like the reality of it is like, we have all these retard normie Bitcoiners that have come in like in the last, I don't know, like 3 years, say 4 years. And they're just like Sailor cultists. Like, I mean, have you seen like these fucking Strategy or like Misty fucking Bitcoiners that like are like Misty maximalists or Strategy maximalists?
Oh yeah, totally.
Like that shit is completely fucking retarded.
Yeah, but I don't even give them any credence, because like, you know, it all kind of depends on how you're forming your opinion on what the actual consensus is. And if you're forming your consensus based on Twitter, there's no way to determine whether the accounts you're looking at are even real or who they're employed on by, or like the information channels are just so thoroughly manipulated and controlled. And all these platforms are there for a reason. Like, I think there's two reasons to be on Twitter. One is you're selling a product, or two, you're engaging in information warfare and trying to counter a narrative of some sort or propagate a narrative. But if you're like forming consensus, because like, I mean, this is something I've learned through the years of like being on the ground, interviewing people, like practicing journalism, you go out there and you talk to a lot of these people that are using Bitcoin, and most of them aren't on Twitter, and a lot of them have never been to a conference, which just kind of showed to me that Twitter and these other platforms are not really a good way to gauge what's actually happening. And I think one of the Bugle's roles is to operate as like a morale booster for people that actually have their brains turned on. And I don't think there's a lot of them that have their brains turned on, but I think the ones that are incredibly, incredibly dangerous to the system. And one of the worst things that you could do to the people with their brains turned on is to make them feel really shitty about themselves and isolated. And I saw this in the US during the COVID lockdowns is, pretty early on when I kind of got my bearings of like how retarded it was, I thought I was like the only person that thought I was retarded. And that was one thing that they were really, really good at, was isolating everybody from each other. They couldn't talk to each other in person. They couldn't actually form any real consensus. And the only way that they could actually like determine what was real was from social media platforms and news agencies. So the news agencies were controlled by the CIA, and the social media platforms were controlled by the CIA.
And the censorship was like in fucking overdrive too. That was another thing where they like totally controlled what people got to see.
Yeah, it was really, it did a number on people that were rational and actually thought for themselves. Like it was very, very damaging psychologically to many of us. And I think the lesson from that is like, we just can't trust these systems to inform us of like what's real and what's happening. In many ways, we're the ones responsible for determining what is real, you know, because we're the ones taking action. And I think where a lot of people get lost is they sit in the sidelines and pontificate on how things should be and don't really practice how, like, this is where I get frustrated with Bitcoiners. Is like, you know, you can have all your opinions on, you know, the free market world that you want to live in, but unless you're actually engaging in the free market in some way or another, then what are you doing? You know, like, talking about it is like a waste of time. You know, living in a fantasy world is a waste of time, in my opinion. You got to actually get on the ground and start actually doing things. And yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I got interested in Monero. So I started accepting it on my podcast. And
nice.
I was interested because there was a market there. And the one thing that has been clear in recent years is that, like, the people actually engaging in this idea of agorism on the internet and kind of carrying the legacy of the Silk Road, they've predominantly moved to using Monero. And that's what makes it interesting, is people are using it.
Yeah, I would agree. And I would say that, like, I've seen a push from, like, people like, well, Jack, first of all, Dorsey, and then Jeff Booth, like, yesterday or the day before, was talking about this. I've seen a lot of Bitcoiners lately, like in the last, like, 2-3 weeks, maybe a month, come out and say, like, look, Bitcoin's going to fail if we don't start using it. So, like, how damaging do you think maximalism has been for, like, Bitcoin's use in agorism and peer-to-peer markets and things of that nature, like pushing the HODL narrative?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's really been damaging. I think it's kind of silly. Like, I used to be a maximalist. And I used to be a little bit religious about it, and until I started listening to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts a week and got a little bit more entropy. I identify as a shitcoiner now because I use Monero. And, like, nice. I say this publicly, because I just don't really care. You know, like, I don't want to be in your stupid religion or your stupid club. It's just not satisfying to me. And I relate, even though I don't use all the privacy coins, but I think I relate to somebody like you more than I relate to somebody like Jack Dorsey, who you know, who was a huge part of being responsible for manufacturing the consent around COVID and destroying a lot of communities and a lot of people's lives. And yeah, as far as, like, the HODL narrative and Bitcoin maximalism, my whole thought on it is, I think a lot of it's been propagated by companies like Swan Bitcoin. And they do it as, like, a marketing strategy because they have a shitty product. Well, I mean, it's like a mediocre product. Like, I wouldn't say it's a bad product. Like, they deliver what they're selling. But it's really not that different from what everybody else has, like what Coinbase has, what all these other platforms that sell Bitcoin using KYC. It's like the same exact thing, but they differentiate themselves through identity politics. And what I see maximalism is it's assigning people an identity in the same way that, you know, politics works. Religion works. Like, you're this branch of Christianity, you're this affiliated with this political party, you're a libertarian, you're, you know, whatever. Like, I don't really, like, I jokingly refer to myself as a cigarette capitalist, you know, when people ask me my political pronouns, but I just, like, reject that, all of that thinking, because it, like, I'm an individual who uses their own brain. I'm not a part of your group. And I think like these people that have determined that the greatest threat to Bitcoin is Ethereum and XRP are very, very short-sighted. They're very, very short-sighted, because I kind of reject the idea of, like, these great threats to Bitcoin. I think there are threats to Bitcoin that could cause it to fail, but I think, you know, it's really about you determining what's the threat to you, yourself. And I think, like, the greatest threat is not Ethereum and Vitalik. Like, you look at Vitalik and man, if you think that guy's a threat to you, I don't know what you're thinking. But I think people need to be a little bit more centered in their thinking and think a little bit critically. You know, there's all these people running around that have just absolutely devastated people's savings and ability to make money. The tax system is insane. The criminal justice system is insane. There's so many ways for you to get locked in a cage for just, you know, engaging in peaceful, nonviolent activities that are morally acceptable in my opinion. And, you know, if you think that, like, the primary evil in the world is degenerate people trading shit coins, I don't really know what the deal is. Like, people, all these people are adults. And, like, I think there's kind of like this nannyism where people think they're so sophisticated and smart, and it's their responsibility to educate the savages, the uninformed savages that are so uninformed. And I think that attitude, you know, like, when you treat people like they're retarded, in the sense of, like, it's very I think the right way to treat retarded people is to make fun of them and make memes about how stupid they are, and then they can suffer from their consequences. It's kind of like this free market of consequences for your decisions. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, you have to allow people to sabotage themselves. And I just don't know why, you know, Corey Clipston and Swan Bitcoin hasn't taken a hard stance against sports gambling, which is like a major trend that is growing in the United States. Like, there's way more people sports gambling than there are shitcoining. But it's like literally the same exact thing. I don't see any difference between speculating on Cum Rocket and somebody, you know, betting on, you know, some sports ball team beating the other sports ball team. It's like the same exact thing. But I think kind of what's damaging for using Bitcoin as this kind of underlies a lot of the maximalism philosophy, which I think has set us back, is this embrace of compliance.
And, yeah, that shit's super gay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would agree that meme coins are similar to gambling. I would say that, like, you know, pump.fun is the same as, like, Caesar's Palace in terms of, you know, like, what you're actually doing with your money. I'm a paranoid conspiracy theorist, and I would say that I'm kind of like a crypto anarchist. So, like, I believe, like, gambling is a victimless crime, and you should be able to gamble and lose all your money if you want. I personally don't have a problem with meme coins. I wouldn't, like, put my money in them, but if they exist, more power to you. With the compliance thing, like, yeah, like, the fact that, like, services like Swan, which KYC you in order to get your Bitcoin, are, like, one of the more popular, like, options, or, like, everybody that, you know, uses Bitcoin, like, 85 to 90% of them got their Bitcoin from, like, Coinbase or another regulated exchange, which they KYC'd to, is, like, way, way more damaging to Bitcoin as a tool for freedom than, you know, like, meme coins are. And also, like, I believe, like, if Bitcoin can be attacked, like, you should attack it. Like, if we're going to have, like, you know, unstoppable, like, peer-to-peer money, it needs to go through a stress test. If you find a way to attack Bitcoin, like, as a Bitcoiner, you should attack Bitcoin to make it more resilient and to make people, like, motivated enough to solve that problem. And if XRP can destroy Bitcoin, then Bitcoin deserves to be destroyed. And same, you know, for Ethereum.
Yeah, I like that perspective. I think I just don't like the religious nature of Bitcoin culture, because I think people just are not going to be fulfilled from that. I think they're inevitably going to be frustrated and unfulfilled from that, and they're going to have to find a different way to validate themselves than kind of falling into the, like, this attitude of Bitcoin fixes everything. But the compliance natures or culture is something that I've been staunchly opposed to. And the reason why is, like, you know, we started out this episode talking about how all these politicians are pedophiles.
Yeah.
Like, what are you, these people complying with at the end of the day is something that is so morally bankrupt. It's disgusting. It's just like, it's absolutely disgusting. Like, I think to create a better future, and like do something meaningful in life, you have to invest in kids at the end of the day.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think you need to oppose evil. Like, if you know that there's like a systemic pedophilia class that's like trying to dominate you and enslave you, you should oppose that. Like, you shouldn't just happily comply with it and like turn a blind eye to it.
Mm-hmm. And I think what it comes down to at the end of the day is people just, I don't think there's enough people beating the drum over and over, just putting the correct context into the sphere. I debated this guy named Mike Brock in last week.
I saw that. You destroyed that guy.
Well, one of the points I was trying to make is, like, he kept on bringing up this attitude of, well, this is what everybody else is doing. This is what everybody else believes. And I was trying to present to him this idea that that's not a legitimate excuse for consenting to a system, because everybody could be wrong, and we've seen throughout history many times that everybody was wrong over and over and over again. And I think one of the important things is just to keep on putting things into context, like, oh yeah, these politicians are pedophiles. They're like, this is who you're complying with. You're complying with extremely morally depraved people that want to destroy everything. And one of the reasons why I like the book Atlas Shrugged so much is because it showcases this tactic or this attitude of just withdrawing from the system and just not participating in it and saying, hey, this is all morally bankrupt and I don't think we can fix it, and we're just going to let it fall apart, not like intentionally destroy it. We're just going to let the people involved destroy it for themselves and try to take our lives and our futures into our own hands and choose the path of self-dignity. And I think that's really what people are sacrificing at the end of the day.
I think Bitcoin was on that trajectory until the block size wars. And then that's kind of why people have moved to Monero, is because Monero is like prioritizing that opting out and, you know, setting up like a parallel system that's made by us rather than pedophiles.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think Monero is cool. I just think there's like this fundamental problem, which is, part of it is that the hashing algorithm, like, the as far as like creating systems that are difficult to co-opt and control, it's difficult when you use an ASIC resistant system. And this is like why it's almost impossible to create another cryptocurrency to compete with Bitcoin, is because it's so difficult to secure it. I think that, like, who are the majority of people with running CPUs that can mine Monero? It's the feds. It's the NSA. It's the feds that run these giant data centers. Now, it's cool that that doesn't necessarily mean it's inherently bad or a system that you shouldn't use, but there's risk associated with it that makes it hard to build an entire world on top of as an alternate system, which is why I haven't become super gung-ho about it. But I think you can still use Bitcoin. And like, I think one of the dangers is like you can still build all these products on Bitcoin. And like the Samurai guys have gotten, you know, kind of wrecked by the feds. And that's been super disappointing. It's been super disappointing to see how the community has responded to that, or the lack of response in support for those guys. Like I found the Samurai guys incredibly annoying. And I made fun of them before they went to jail, but on principle, you know, I'm a big supporter of them and what they're doing, because I think it's just like, you know, especially with the context that we've seen recently with how much money laundering the feds have been engaging in. It's just absolutely absurd. You know, the criminals are prosecuting non-criminals.
Yeah, I would agree with that completely. And I think like the assault on free speech is not only just on like your social media posts, it's also on these guys writing code. Like, I don't want to live in a world where the feds get to dictate what kind of software people can make. Like, that's some bullshit.
Yeah, and what's cool is you know, there's been a product that, or a group that has spun off, and they're kind of carrying the torch at which Samurai started, called Ashigaru.
Yeah, I would love to interview those guys. If you know them, tell them to come on my show.
Yeah, I should probably interview them too. I actually don't know them, but I was talking to somebody affiliated with Samurai earlier this week, and he vouched for them as being legit dudes, which was pretty cool to hear that. The Ungovernable Misfits guys have did a good interview with them.
Nice.
But I think one of the challenges is like, it is kind of the morale game of like, you know, if people like really believe that hope is lost, they're not going to fight the battle at the end of the day, and they're not going to participate. Like, if you destroy the market demand, which I think is a big part of, you know, why the feds have gone after the Samurai developers, is because they wanted to, and you saw the results of like all these wallet developers fleeing the United States, wallets voluntarily pulling off their services off the App Store, you know, all of that. And that was like tactically an incredibly smart move by the feds to kind of destroy the demand. And I think, you know, the response of like I like to reference American gun culture a lot as what I think is one of the more effective tactics to combat these guys. Is like, you know, there's all these brain dead people that point to gun culture in America and say, hey, things are this way because this piece of paper says that we can own guns. It's like, no, that's not why. If anything, the piece of paper is just a meme that emboldens people. But the reason why people are able to own firearms in the United States, where as the majority of the rest of the world can't, or it's more difficult to legally, is because they have culturally decided that that's a hill worth dying for. The second that they start trying to register guns and, you know, do these bans and do red flag gun laws, they just freak out. Like, any sort of negative gun legislation is like the best thing that can happen for a gun store, because people just freak out and they just go on like a buying spree and like buy whatever, as much of whatever is about to be banned. And what has resulted is you have more guns than people in the United States, which is super cool.
Yeah.
And I think the powerful story there is like, when you have these cultural attitudes about things, and people actually take action and are willing to hold the ground and die on a hill, you're in a pretty powerful position, and there's not a lot that the controllers can really do to stop it. And so, like, one of my fears with, you know, the narrative that Bitcoin has been co-opted, or, you know, everything sucks and is hopeless with Bitcoin, so we have to use, you know, this other coin, is that it kind of kills the market demand, that there's less people that are willing to use a product like Ashigaru, and there's less people that are willing to work on and develop these products on Bitcoin. There's less people that are willing to use it. And like, I don't really think there's anything wrong with using alternative products, especially if they work, to achieve your goal, because at the end of the day, all these things are just tools to get where you want. I don't see it as like a replacement for God or anything like that, like some sort of great thing. Like, I think it's a tool for you to be able to build your life in the way that you want to protect yourself from the destruction that these people are creating and really to build yourself up. Like, that's the way that I see it.
I see it as a tool also, but like, I see it as a flawed tool. Like, the privacy thing on Bitcoin, the fact that there's like a whole industry, you know, like a $1 billion industry with, like, you know, I don't know, like 50, 100 different companies that are all like surveilling the Bitcoin chain. Like, for Bitcoin to be used for like these like freedom use cases, like, if you know, like free markets and selling like legally questionable shit on the dark web, for instance, like, observing reality has like led us to believe that Bitcoin is flawed for that, and that it's actually like a huge OPSEC risk, and you're probably going to get arrested if you use it because there's no privacy in Bitcoin. Like, it's a flawed tool. Like, I don't see it as a religion either, but like, I'm not going to use a tool that has like that kind of attack surface when there's another tool that doesn't, and you know, it protects you a lot, but it's just a better tool for the job. Like, to me, like, the inactivity in the Bitcoin like developer world, like the fact that they never added privacy because they wanted to like be friendly to regulators and like this kind of thing, like, it is done a huge amount of damage to Bitcoin. And now, like, it feels like the development process is being gatekept, and like things like privacy by default are never going to be added, even though there's other chains that demonstrate that, look, this works in real life, this works in the wild. Like, why hasn't Bitcoin adopted this yet? You know, like, the whole transparency aspect of Bitcoin is like a fatal design flaw to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's all fair, but I don't think we're ever going to make any meaningful progress unless there's really a market that's developed and a demand that's shown for products like that, which is interesting that Monero is showing that there is a market demand for these types of features that could be implemented on Bitcoin.
Like, every feature that is implemented in Monero was like originally proposed for Bitcoin, and then Bitcoin developers just were like, no, we're not going to do that. And Monero mm-hmm. people were like, hey, actually, that sounds like a good idea. Let's do it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just like a fundamental design choice that's different, right? The trade-offs are different. So I identify more with like the trade-offs that Monero has made than Bitcoin these days. And like, I also really disagree with like the layer two, like scaling and layers thing. Like, I feel like every fucking layer two is just a bunch of vaporware, like whether it be Lightning or, you know, Arc or like these side chains like Liquid, or even like in the Ethereum world, like the rollups, like they're all like, they have admin keys, you know, like they're really centralized and they pretend to be decentralized. So like, I'm not convinced that scaling in layers is the way to go.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. Yeah. I mean, I'm a daily Lightning user, and as a daily Lightning user, I can confirm the UX sucks.
Yeah. Do you run your own node and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see, I did that for like years, and then I just got sick of fucking dealing with it, and I just stopped. And now, like, if I use Lightning, I'll use like Blink Wallet or whatever, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, what's cool is, so like, I mean, I just have not done a ton of research on Monero like I'd like to. Like, I've been kind of excited listening to Ungovernable Misfits' new show with Seth for Privacy talking about Monero, just because it gives me a little bit more, you know, information. I bought the Monero standard book, and I just ground my gears. I couldn't.
Really? Let's talk about that. Why?
Well, when
I haven't read it yet.
Skip like the whole monetary history thing, because I was like, okay, I've read like 100,000 Bitcoin books, you know, talking about the subject, and I just don't want to hear about it again. So I skipped to the part where it's talking about Monero, and the author of the book got to the part where, just like in the first like couple pages of the episode the chapter talking about Monero, and kind of how it works. And he said one of the like the core features of it is that it's revolutionary. And I was like, that's not a feature, that's just like opinion. Like, this is retarded. But so that's about as far as I got with it. I should probably give it another shot, but it's just I thought it was kind of showcasing a lot of the same like attitudes that I struggle with Bitcoin maximalism. But yeah, anyway, so I got onboarded with Cake Wallet. I'm not running my own Monero node, so I just don't really have a lot of confidence that it's actually private, or as private as it could be. And, you know, if the market shows that it's really like a viable way for me to earn income, that's what I was testing, is if users or listeners to my podcast would, because like Ungovernable Misfits said that they oftentimes get more Monero boosts on XMR chat than Bitcoin boosts on Fountain.
I do too, to be honest. I get a lot more XMR chats than I do Fountain boosts or streaming sats.
Yeah, I mean, that's what really interested me. It got me interested in using it. And and I've yet to see that, but I think a big part of that is I just haven't really pushed for it. It's just kind of like a passive thing happening. But that was interesting to me. And like, my experience with Monero right off the offset was pretty good. It's like incredibly easy to use, as far as I could tell, on the chain. Cheap to send transactions, relatively quick. Like the way that Cake Wallet, I don't know if this is how all Monero wallets work, it takes a while to sync. So like, if I haven't checked my wallet balance in a little bit, it might take a few minutes for it to sync to be able to send a transaction, which is kind of annoying, but it's not really
All Monero wallets are like that. But like the new version of Cake Wallet that just came out, they just like did a background sync feature. Mm-hmm. So you can like turn the wallet on, you know, like open the wallet, and then it'll like start syncing, and then it'll just like stay synced in the background. Like there's like a daemon or something, I guess, that it makes it so like once it's synced, like it resyncs like very, very quickly.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm open and I'm friendly to stuff. So just out of curiosity, like, what have been like some of the more interesting stories, or maybe even from your personal experience, like how has Monero really improved your life in a meaningful way, or other people that you know?
I mean, like, first of all, I've been able to like transact outside of the system without KYCing, pretty much. I would say that people in Monero, we have a culture of spending Monero rather than hodling it, using That's Monero, cool. Right? Like, I think a lot of Monero people believe in the medium of exchange use case over the store value use case. And like, a lot of Monero people would choose to save in Bitcoin, like to store value, but spend Monero in real life, like to spend it because Bitcoin's not private. And it's, you know, it's expensive sometimes, like if there's high fees on chain and stuff like that. So there's that. And then personally, like, I like basically did a deep dive on Join Market, on Wasabi Wallet, and on Samurai. because I was really trying to get to the bottom of Bitcoin privacy. Like, I wanted to know, because like when I first got into Bitcoin, like I first started buying it in 2014, but I first started learning about it in like 2010 when the Silk Road was like operating, right? And that's kind of why I got into it. Like, my friends were like buying weed and like ecstasy and shit off the internet. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, how are you even doing that? So I started learning about Bitcoin. I was already into gold, and Bitcoin, you know, it's like digital gold, right? It shares a lot of characteristics with like, you know, gold is like sound money and stuff like that. So like, I was interested in it because of that. And then I started seeing like these dark webs get taken down, you know, people getting arrested for their Bitcoin transactions, Chainalysis, like as an industry, like all these different, you know, Elliptic and Chainalysis, and I don't know the other ones, but there's lots of them, right? Like all these blockchain surveillance things. So I studied the shit out of Samurai. I studied the shit out of Join Market, and I studied the shit out of Wasabi Wallet. Wasabi Wallet reused addresses, right? And their mixes could be demixed. With Join Market, because the maker and the taker fees, there's like an attack vector through there where you can demix the Join Market mixes. And then Samurai, like, they seem to be the one that everybody trusted in the community. But before they got arrested, like, I wasn't sure if they were feds or not, because like there was something indicating that their app didn't reproduce like exactly. Like, there's a wallet website, and they will check if the binaries reproduce to the source code, like exactly. And their binaries did not reproduce to the source code. And then also, everyone was saying that they had everybody's XPubs. And if you have everybody's XPubs, you can like see every fucking wallet address, and you know, like everything's like an open book. Like, you could trace everything. So between those two things around Samurai, I was just like, well, they could be legit. They could be feds. It could be a honeypot. I'm not really sure. So fuck it. I'm just going to use Monero because it's way private, and everybody that is like on the dark web is saying to use Monero and never to use Bitcoin. So I started looking into Monero and taking it seriously, because before I was a maxi and I thought Monero was kind of a shit coin, right? Like, I thought it couldn't scale. There might be an inflation bug, all the FUD that you hear. Like, I thought that shit until I started actually like listening with an open mind to what Monero people were saying. And, you know, why they made the trade-offs and stuff like that. And I started considering them and weighing them in my own mind. And that's like why I'm more focused on Monero now. But I would say, like, transacting in Bitcoin, like in 2014, with like no permission, you could send money quickly, cheaply to anybody in the world. You know, you could buy anything with it without anybody stopping you or knowing what you're buying. Like, all the reasons I love Bitcoin are now like in Monero, and Bitcoin is very, very different now. Bitcoin is now like KYC'd mostly. There's a surveillance industry. Sometimes it's not very good to use because like there's congestion on chain and the fees go through the roof because somebody's minting ordinals, and now transaction fees are like $100. Lightning is centralizing. You can surveil Lightning. It's not that private. And like, the people working on Lightning aren't even really working on Lightning privacy so much. They're more just trying to like figure out how to like route the payments and shit, because it's really unreliable as far as like the network topology goes. Like, if you're not connected to like one of the main like liquidity nodes, like run by like Bitrefill or like Bitfinex or like one of these other big businesses, Wallet of Satoshi or whatever, like your payments are going to fail. So even if you use like Lightning Network Plus to do liquidity swaps, so like me and you could like connect our nodes and I trade a channel with you and you trade a channel with me, and then Rod Palmer, like we each open a node, you know, channel to him so that we all have incoming and outgoing liquidity. Like, a lot of times those partners in those liquidity swaps, their nodes will disappear. They'll go offline. They'll close channels with you. And then you're isolated from the rest of the network again, and then your payments fail. So just like the UX and UI of Lightning kind of turned me off to it. And like you said, Monero is amazingly simple to use. You could just click send and you're private, and it's cheap, it's fast. So I don't know, it's just a better user experience.
Totally. Yeah, that's why I don't knock it, is like I think all of that's pretty legitimate. Yeah, I had the same concerns about Samurai and about the like the XPub issue wasn't really an issue if you were running Dojo, but if you were just using the app on your phone, like I'm using Cake Wallet.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I was doing. I didn't have like I had like a node, but it was like on my BTC Pay server. So like, I didn't, you know, connect it to Dojo or whatever. Like, I wasn't technically sophisticated enough to run a BTC pay server and also have it like go through Dojo or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, all of what you just said is really awesome. Like it, I mean, how much of you think Monero's privacy?
Right now, I mean, admittedly, it's not as good as everyone thought because the ring signature, I don't know if you saw the OSPEED research that guy Rucknium put out, but like basically they did a study on the ring signatures and like the decoy algorithm, and it's not as good as it should be. So like apparently like they can statistically knock the ring signatures down to around 4 rather than 16. Mm-hmm. Which is not great. Like, I guess that does make it easier to attack, but like, it's not just ring signatures aren't the only privacy feature in Monero. Like, there's also like the stealth addresses and, you know, the blinded amounts and all that kind of thing. So like together, Monero's privacy is still intact. They still can't really trace it, but ring signatures are not as good as people thought. Like they're a lot worse than people thought. There's a fix for OSPEED, which they put in the report. And I don't know if we're going to like actually as a community, like fork it in to the protocol or not, because there's also the full chain membership proofs upgrade, which is already like in, you know, development. So when that happens, basically the ring signatures will go from 16 transactions to like every single transaction on chain in the whole history of Monero, right? So the privacy will dramatically improve. So I don't know if they want to, you know, if the developers have gotten an agreement or consensus around like, should we do this short-term fix until full chain membership proofs? Like, should we do this OSPEED fix and improve the ring signatures? Or should we just say, fuck it and wait because full chain membership proofs are coming and it's not even going to be an issue anymore. So admittedly, it's not as private as we thought, but it's still more private than anything else. Mm-hmm. And that, yeah. I mean, like Zcash's privacy is better, but nobody actually uses like the private transactions, right? Like Zcash's encryption is similar to like full chain membership proofs. Mm-hmm. Like Zcash, like if you do like a shielded transaction, like your anonymity set for the shielded transaction would be like every transaction on the chain that's private, I guess. Mm-hmm. But since only like, you know, a few people use the shielded transactions, there's not really a big crowd to hide in, right?
Well, I think one of the dangers with a lot of these privacy coins isn't even necessarily like the blockchain transaction history, but the doing things like leaking IP addresses through your wallets and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
Or even the services you use, like if you're using some sort of exchange to go in and out of Bitcoin. I know that's how some people have been caught, is they leak their IP addresses to that third party that they're exchanging in and out of Bitcoin and Monero.
Yeah, I would agree. Like, I think metadata is a huge issue as far as like privacy goes, because like even if like Monero has like full chain membership proofs and it's much more private than it currently is, if you're going to like a KYC exchange to cash out or something like that, you're still, you know, giving up critical information about yourself.
Yeah. I mean, something I really try to do at the end of the day is like, and kind of why I push back against maximalism is I think when you get into like this tribal attitude, you kind of throw intellectual honesty out the door. And yeah. I think intellectual honesty is incredibly important, because what we're talking about and dealing with here are topics that have an incredible amount of nuance to them. And just like the blanket, like Monero's bad because of the inflation bug is not really, or potential for an inflation bug, or it's centralized because they hard fork every six, you know, like the kind of like the narratives that many Bitcoiners use against it, just completely write it off. It's not capturing the full picture.
I agree, because I think like the hard forks in Monero, like personally to me, that's a better system than Bitcoin's complete lack of governance and the fact that like people have to argue for 5 fucking years before something gets soft forked into the protocol. Like, to me, I would rather have, you know, developers like being willing to improve the protocol rather than being completely inactive and debating shit on Twitter for five fucking years.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I can understand that. That's all really cool.
Yeah, I'm not a maximalist either, man. Like, I am into other privacy coins. Like, on my podcast, I talk to other privacy coin projects. Like, but that's really what I'm more into, is not so much maximalism, but, like, I'm into technologies that could be very, very subversive to the system. And I think in order for that to happen, they need privacy, right? So, like, I know a lot of people don't even like the term privacy coins. Like, they would prefer that we just say, no, these are actual cryptocurrencies. Mm-hmm. Like, these transparent chains, they're not true cryptocurrencies because they're not private by default, right? So I would consider, like, Monero, like, one of the only actual cryptocurrencies. I would consider Bitcoin a cryptocurrency because it was the first one. But I feel like they dropped the ball on implementing features that Satoshi wanted to implement from the beginning. Like, one of the first tweets that Hal Finney made is like, looking on ways to add more privacy to Bitcoin or more anonymity to Bitcoin, right? Like, what the fuck happened to that? Like, why wasn't that ever followed up on?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's all really hard because the conversations are so, like, co-opted, and it's hard to determine who's who and what their incentives are. And we saw this very early on in Bitcoin with, you know, like, Gavin going and visiting the CIA.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mike Hearn, you know, being very questionable as far as, like, what his incentives and who the people he was potentially answering to were, and just a lot of stuff like that makes it really difficult. And, you know, the world of privacy is also very difficult because I saw this. I think the feds at one point made a fork of graphene that they onboarded a lot of people operating in kind of the black market ecosystem into, and just had them completely backdoored. So that's like a murky world, which is, you know,
I just saw something similar. I don't know if it was graphene, but it was like a different message. It was like an encrypted messaging app that Interpol did that. Mm-hmm. They had like a backdoored app, and they got all these like dark web guys to use it. And then they just did like a huge bust because of it.
Yeah. Which is why, like, I think like privacy is important. And it just kind of depends on what your attack surface area is and who the adversary you're dealing with is at the end of the day. And, like, for me, you know, I'm not, I don't know, like, maybe the feds will come after me, but I don't think they will. I'm a journalist right now, just trying to report the news. You know, they screw with journalists all the time, but I'm kind of flying under the radar as far as I can tell.
I think the humor aspect that you guys have kind of shields you from scrutiny a little bit.
I hope so, but, you know, I think at the end of the day, people just have to, like, stand their ground and be non-compliant. Like, the world of privacy is very difficult. It's questionable. Like, I don't believe in this idea of perfect privacy because, you know, for one, all the hardware that we're using is just, like, completely screwed up.
Yeah. Then privacy is always changing. Like, that's another thing why I like the hard fork system in Monero, where there's, like, regular hard forks, is because we need to keep evolving in order to maintain our edge. Like, the adversaries are constantly improving, so we got to constantly improve as well.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think torrenting is really interesting because torrenting really, really turned the music industry upside down. An industry that was just kind of like gatekeeping and not really providing a whole lot of value. Like, these labels that were just have been charging royalties on songs, like back in the day when the only way to get digital music was to pay like $1 per song on iTunes. That was kind of stupid. And in these, all these services came out, and they were really popular because they were really easy to use. And, you know, there's like some problems, like everybody got viruses on their computer from like LimeWire and things like that. But they tried to enforce it and really got nowhere. They, every once in a while, they'd catch some guy and they'd plaster him to a wall as like trying to make an example. But then, you know, people just kept on doing it. And then all of a sudden you had services like Spotify come out, and like the entire market shifted. The same thing happened with the streaming services, where the market had to shift to where the demand was. And like when the cost got too high, the like white market just had to completely reinvent itself and actually create a useful product to that people wanted to use, instead of just like saying like, hey, we're going to hide behind the politicians that we have blackmail on and control and
just take all the money.
Yeah. And, so I think those are kind of cool stories of like how to create meaningful change. And, you know, you look at like Dennis Porter, I think he's a hero in my opinion. You know,
really?
Yeah, he's cured erectile dysfunction. Like, but I think the one thing that he's wrong on all the time is like he kind of credits marijuana becoming legalized in many states to lobbyists. And I think the reality is like people just kept on smoking weed, even though it was illegal. And,
I would agree with that. You know why? Because I lived in California when they tried to legalize it, like, I don't know, like in 2000 something, like 8, 10, somewhere around there. And the growers themselves were like against the legalization because they didn't want like the corporations to come in and basically put them all out of business, which is what has happened in California now. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like the humble, like hippie families, you know, that were there from the 60s growing weed no longer are profitable. Like now it's just like big giant fucking businesses that are, you know, growing huge amounts and huge farms and greenhouses and shit. But I remember like the weed dealers themselves, like the guys that were growing the weed were like printing their own fucking, you know, like propaganda up and like giving it to their customers and being like, yo, vote no on this, vote no on this, vote no on this. They wanted it to maintain illegal so that they could keep like the artificially inflated black market price and keep control of the market. And that didn't turn out very well for them because now they're no longer in business because legalization put them out of business. But like, it was not the growers that wanted legalization. The legalization happened exactly for what you said, that everybody just smoked all the time and didn't give a fuck.
Mm-hmm.
So That's a good observation.
They had to completely, you know, change their systems, and like prohibition of alcohol is another example of this. And I think that's just like the playbook for individuals to actually like shift the world in the way that they want it is like, you don't have to wait around for permission to do what you're doing. Like, sure, you're assuming risk by being a non-compliant individual, but you know, if you actually want the world to look the way that you want it to, you got to take a little bit of risk and stand up for it. It's not coming for you.
That's why I respect the samurai guys so much. Like after finding out that they weren't feds and, you know, watching them go through their legal shit, the fact that they never bent the knee is very, very commendable.
Totally. I think it's an example for us all. I think, those are inspiring people. Like when you actually believe in something and you believe in yourself enough to not be willing to compromise on your principles, like I find that incredibly inspiring. I find the opposite of catering to people just to and kind of letting them control the narratives and how things work, just because it's like easier and softer, and you want this is like my frustration with the boomers. Like I am like perpetually frustrated with the boomers. It's like you screwed all the younger generations. Like it, and not only that, they're complaining about like how worthless like millennials and zoomers are. They're like, these guys, they're on the internet all the time and they know how to use their iPhones, so they suck. They're a bunch of like cupcakes. And it's like, hey, you motherfuckers decided that you wanted your timeshares more than living a principled life and creating a better future for your kids. And that's pathetic. In my opinion, that's just like absolutely pathetic. The weak individuals with no principles and morals just causing destruction for future generations. And then not only that, they have the lack of self-awareness, and they just say that like all the younger generations suck. But it's like, hey, you motherfuckers are the ones that parented these generations, so you're just like admitting that you suck. And I don't really want to replicate that. I don't want to pass on a shitty future to my kid because I decided that I wanted an easier, softer life and wanted to watch Netflix instead of trying to be productive and build things that build a future for my child that I would want to live in. That's, I think, incredibly weak and pathetic, and I just don't have any respect for that. And I just think that like that's the attitude, and this is why narratives are so important, because it informs people on what to do. Like people make decisions based on the information that they have, and so if they're presented with a bunch of useless information all the time, they're going to act on that. And that's like the challenge that we have of like, you know, all these people that think they're really smart, think they're really well informed, and they're just completely retarded because they have trust for authority in the people that are presenting the information to them. They lack the self-awareness to know that they're retarded. Like that's like, it's problematic for me because they impact me because they have decision-making power in the world, and their consent is what allows the system to operate. But I think there's a way to manufacture non-consent by just telling the truth at the end of the day and framing things. And like, yeah, the weed story is a great one. It's like weed is being legalized because people said, fuck you, we're not following the rules. And there was like culture around it. There was music and movies, and like they didn't wait to make Cheech and Chong until it was legalized.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And like I would say that like, well, Bitcoin at least has culture to it. I just don't know if I agree with the culture and like the way it's moving right now. Like there is like Bitcoin music and like memes and like, you know, like events and this kind of thing, but like I feel like because they've focused on mass adoption rather than like a core ideological group of like hardcore fucking cypherpunks, like the mass adoption thing just brought in normies that don't even understand why they're there. They just think it's a get rich quick thing. They're fine with like custodial, you know, Bitcoin that's KYC, you know, reporting to the IRS their gains and all this shit. Whereas like, I think Bitcoin would have been much better served if it would have focused on being like completely fucking counterculture and like, well, maybe not so much mass adoption, maybe more like adoption by fucking people that, you know, are trying to build like a parallel system.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the battle's over. I don't think the battle's lost, and that's why I continue to engage with Bitcoin culture and like the things that I see as problematic. I try and you know, address it, and I think there's a free market for memes, and I think my memes are better.
I like your memes. Your memes are good.
Yeah, I just don't think these people are that that inspired, and I just don't like, they don't listen to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts a week, and they don't read Atlas Shrugged enough, and they don't smoke enough cigarettes. And I just don't think they can compete with me on the free market. I think I can just obliterate them, which is why I engage in things the way that I do. And I just don't think the battle's over. I buy my cigarettes not using KYC, and you know, sometimes I use Monero, but most of the time I use Bitcoin, and it's not custodial Lightning. It's I get like, I'm willing to wade in the bad UX, and I just don't think it's over. Like, I don't think it's over for Bitcoin. I totally sympathize with the frustrations, because like, I use Bitcoin and I deal with those same frustrations. But like, all these retarded people champion compliance and telling you to engage with the pedophiles, like, fuck them.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, fuck them. Like, they don't have any control over my life. I'm not going to allow them to have control over my life. I'm not going to let them influence my thinking. I'm going to stick my middle finger up, call them a bunch of fags, and just, like, meme them to death. And, it's fun. Like, I want to have fun with my life. I want to, this is one of the things that, one of the biggest mistakes I made during COVID was I stopped having fun. I gave these people way too much power over me. And, I'm not going to do that again. I'm not going to let them have power and control over me, because they don't deserve it. They've done nothing to deserve having any influence over me. And what's great about what they're doing is they've created a market for me to exist and for the Beagle to exist. So the more retarded that they become, the more market demand there is for the stuff that I'm doing.
Yeah, for mocking them.
Yeah. So I encourage them to keep on being retarded. I encourage Sailor to keep on being gay and keep on being a gay fed. And I think that other people, you know, that have their brains turned on are going to see all this shit, and they're going to be dissatisfied with it, because it's really not fulfilling. Like, this is what the boomers, I think, showed, is like the trade-off of having timeshares at the expense of your future generation, of your children, it's not really a fulfilling life. It just doesn't, like going to Cabo or going to, you know, Florida or wherever you got your timeshare. It's just not, satisfactory. It doesn't fill the void of the need for smoking cigarettes and listening to Bitcoin podcasts. But yeah, I think the culture really matters a lot. And I think morale really matters. I'm pretty convinced that, like, you know, like 70% of a war is determined by just the morale of the troops.
Yeah, I mean, they say, like, right, wars are won in the hearts and minds of the people.
Yeah.
So I mean, if your troops are feeling fucking totally demoralized, they're not going to win no war.
No, they're not. It's this is why, like, you're watching the Ukraine war right now, like, why the propaganda is so, the Ukrainian government has, and the Russian government has, identified that, you know, propaganda and war is incredibly important in controlling the information channels. This is why, like, people go to prison for, one of the things that was interesting, that really isn't talked about in American history is, like, there were a lot of people that dissented against World War II. Like, World War II, the U.S.'s involvement in World War II, and there were people that, like, had to go to Mexico because they would get thrown in prison for criticizing the war. But they'd go into Mexico and they'd broadcast pirate radio over to the U.S. Criticizing the war. And it's like, it's crazy the way that the government was able to manufacture consent to support the war. And I think that's part of the reason why World War II is one of the most propagandized parts of American history is useful to frame things as like this great evil and this great crusade against the great evil. But you know, this is why people are getting so mad at Darryl Cooper right now, is because he's challenging this ironclad doctrine that's been accepted for so long. And it's not because things that he's saying are actually untrue. It's that he's bold enough to even, you know, question,
accepted dogma.
Yeah. Accepted dogma. Exactly. And, I think that's great. And I think like the reverence, you know, for the cathedral it's incredibly, incredibly important. And also like the proper framing of what's going on, of like, hey, so like we run something every year, we call it Compliance Pride Month. And okay. It coincides with Gay Pride Month. And we just highlight, you know, all the compliant companies and in Bitcoin and the compliant narratives. And I think it's great because compliance is gay. And why it's gay is because of who the people that, you know, these people are complying with, and just like the depraved nature of them. And like, I just like, I think it's okay to comply in some circumstances, but like, I think if that's like the overarching narrative of like the only way that people know how to interact with Bitcoin, it's kind of problematic, and therefore it's worth making fun of, because it's not the only way to interact with Bitcoin. And like, this is one of the challenges with the controls over the narrative. Like, so we have something called the PodConf Industrial Complex. Are you familiar with this?
I've seen you meme about PodConf here and there. Is that you guys?
So PodConf is our arch enemy.
Okay.
And
I've seen some PodConf memes on Twitter, but I don't really follow it too much.
Yeah. So what PodConf is the shadow organization in the Bugleverse that is seeking to control the narrative on compliance. And they believe that NGU is the only thing that matters and that compliance is defiance.
That's the one I saw, the compliance is defiance meme that you put up.
Yeah. And so, you know, what they do is they essentially, they control the narrative behind the scenes and make sure that everybody's focused on compliance so that the price goes up. And the reason why there are arch enemies is because that's just not reality. Like the price goes up when more people podcast about Bitcoin. But like, there's a lot of people that are out there, and they're kind of caught in the social trap of like the way that PodConf controls the narrative of like, you know, they get in, they think the only way to buy Bitcoin or to interact with Bitcoin is to upload your government ID to some sort of app. And they don't know that there's another way to interact with Bitcoin. That it's just like, they're like, oh, this is how you do it. You know, you use Cash App or you use Strike or you use Swan. And that's it. And that's because of PodConf.
Or River.
Yeah, River. And that's just because of the way that PodConf exists. Like, I mean, there's easy ways to do it. You know, you can go on Azteca and buy it for like
a voucher.
Yeah, buy a voucher. It's a little bit harder if you're trying to move large amounts of money around, but you know, there's ways to do it if you get creative.
There's Bisc.
There's Bisc. I've actually never used Bisc.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think like the way that I like to use Bitcoin is I've just built a lot of friendships with people over the years, and move in and out
through your friend group.
My friends.
Do you use Vexel at all?
I have never used Vexel, but I've heard it exists, and I think that guy's kind of cool. He sent me one of the guys behind Vexel sent me a video for my music video for the Marty Bent Says His Time Is Different music video. So that was pretty cool.
I got to check your music video out, especially if you're making fun of Marty Bent.
I mean, I'm kind of a Luddite, You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I used to be a lot more interested in tinkering with all these products and services back when I first got in. I think my first experience with trying to run Raspi Blitz on a Raspberry Pi.
Okay.
Having had no Linux experience and getting in the command line.
That must have been fun.
Yeah, I wasted about 24 hours, literally, trying to do that. It was one of the most frustrating experiences. But I mean, I think you can only do so much tinkering, and then you kind of get frustrated, and then you find something that works for you. You know what I mean? There's a lot of ways that you can go about things. There's a very like diverse set of products, and the ecosystem is very broad, and products and services which you can use. So yeah, Vexel sounds cool. So Vexel's kind of, is that like
it's an app that basically does exactly what you were just talking about with your friend group. Like you open your account on Vexel, and then it'll go through your contact list and add like other friends, you know, that use the app. And mm-hmm. then you guys can, it will add like their friends too. So like basically if I wanted to buy Bitcoin from like your friend Rod Palmer, like I know he's your friend and me and you are cool and you vouch for him, so I know I can like basically pretty much trust him to go meet face to face and do like a P2P transaction without getting ripped off.
That's dope.
Yeah, it's actually super cool. And there's like a bunch of shit, like there's a bunch of offers and stuff. Like people are not just like buying and selling Bitcoin, they're like selling goods and services for Bitcoin. So you can buy like fucking like eggs and honey and, you know, like, I don't know, random products like that people want to sell.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool, man. There's like there's a big community in Europe. Cause I think the guys that made it are like based in Czechia or something like that, like in Prague. It's like mm-hmm. the slush pool, like brains guys that made it, I think. And then it's like in every country, but like here where I live in Colombia, and like my Vexel community is very, very small, but like in other places, there's lots of people that use it. So I was just wondering if you use it, cause it kind of facilitates like peer to peer amongst friend groups.
Yeah. I'm just kind of, I don't know. I kind of have a paranoia about using a ton of products like that. And, which is why I'm not as, active at using them, but I think it's cool that stuff exists, and it'd probably be good for me to do more research on it. I just haven't found like a real need for myself to do it. But yeah, I mean, why aren't people using Vexel in Colombia? They're too sold on USDT, or
yeah, I would say so. Like back in the day, people used Bitcoin more here. Now, like everybody's on USDT just because it's like cheap and fast and doesn't have volatility.
Yeah. Well, there's going to be a big development here in the near future. Is Lightning's going to magically start working because USDT comes to it. Are you ready for that?
Yeah, I've been hearing about it. I was at a conference recently in January in El Salvador. I was at Plan B when they announced that they were going to do Lightning USDT. And everybody was very, very excited about it at the conference. And I personally don't know how successful it's going to be. I don't know. Like, I mean, like using Polygon Tether is like as fast and probably around as cheap as using Lightning would be. So I don't mm-hmm. know like how much market share Lightning's going to reclaim, but I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, I think there's like this funny shift in Bitcoin maximalism that seems to be happening kind of across the board. Is it went from Bitcoin only to being Bitcoin and USDT only.
Yeah. And I would say that is because a lot of maximalists at conferences, probably people that listen to PodComp content, they use Tether more than they do Bitcoin because they want to hodl their Bitcoin, right? So like you'll go to a conference and you'll see people like paying with Tether, like instead of Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they have Lightning, but I mean like a lot of people just use Tether. And there's that aspect of it. And then like, I think a part of it is like people like Max Kaiser and like, you know, like Samson Mao, like these like maxi like influencers, they give Tether a pass.
Mm-hmm.
So then the maxis that like consume their content will give Tether a pass,
mm-hmm.
which is, I don't know how to feel about it. I don't really think Tether's particularly good for Bitcoin, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, they're interesting. I've never actually used Tether, but I just find the narratives to be all really interesting. I've been trying to shift for the future. I've been trying to front run the shift for the future. And I've been pricing things instead of pricing in dollars. I've been pricing in USDT. I think that's a lot more progressive.
I might have to start doing that.
Yeah. It's
what do you think about the idea that Tether is made by Bitcoiners? Like they're like, you know, like Paolo's a Bitcoiner, like, and that because they were Bitcoiners, they deserve like a pass from Bitcoiners.
Well, I just don't really like the term Bitcoiners in general. It's kind of like creating
a group, and you're not part of a group. Yeah, I got you.
It's just that I don't know. I feel like that there's a lot of brain dead thinking and a lack of critical thinking that just results from that of like you said, like people get a pass because they're part of your group. You know, they identify with your group, and so therefore they're good. And it's useful in some ways, but I think the real revolution is a bunch of people running around making decisions based on their own self-interest versus like a collective walking in lockstep fighting against another collective. Like I think that's where things which is why I don't really like mind a lot of the argumentativeness and the drama, because I think one, it's funny, but I think that's just kind of like how things happen at the end of the day. When you have a bunch of people thinking for themselves, you're never going to get people to actually agree on everything. You know, if everybody's using their brains, there's going to be inherent differences in opinions that they come to, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. Like I think you and I have very different views on a lot of different things, but I think we can get along and have a good time, you know, and smoke cigarettes together.
Yeah, I think so too. Like that's one of the things that I really don't like about like this whole like censorship movement that we've seen emerge in the last, like, I don't know, 5 or 10 years. Like before, you could disagree with people and hold completely different opinions and still get along on like a human level. But now like people are so fucking polarized, like from disagreements online, like there's no like humanity middle ground. And like, you know, people want to destroy your life because you have a different fucking opinion. Like they want to get you fired from your job and get your account shut down and get you deplatformed financially simply because you don't agree that trannies should be reading to kids or whatever, you know, like the polarization, like the fact that you can't have different opinions now is really fucked up.
Well, I think you can. This kind of goes back to like, you can't, or I don't think it's, I mean, you can do whatever you want, but I just don't think the internet's real. I don't think anything on the internet's real.
And have you heard like, that dead internet shit?
Oh yeah.
So you think we're really living in that?
I mean, kind of. It's just like the problem is like the average individual is at such a disadvantage because they don't have the resources that a lot of these larger groups that have an incentive to shift narratives in a certain way do. And so they're kind of sitting on the sidelines trying to figure out what's going on. And you can't really identify who's who on the internet. And I'm not advocating for, I'll never advocate for KYC on the internet. I'm not like Nikki Haley or, you know, somebody like that or Mike Barak.
Yeah, but, no, I'll oppose that shit until I die. Like, fuck that.
Yeah. But I think the solution to that is people just thinking a little bit more critically about the information that they're consuming. And I think this is like one of the challenges is like, you know, if you're on a social media platform, I think you need to be asking yourself on a regular basis is like, is this making my life better or worse? Am I more content? Do I feel more empowered in the things that am I doing? Am I able to live into who I want to be more or less so as a result of being on this platform? And I don't really think that's taught to anybody. I think people just get onboarded to these platforms and they just get sucked into it, and it hijacks them emotionally because they kind of get into this like lizard brain reactionary type of thinking of like, oh, this person is attacking who I am, so I have to fight them. And I think that's just giving people a lot of power at the end of the day. Like, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of despots out there. And I think the majority of people either in our society either sympathize with despots or and support despots or are bloodthirsty individuals trying to control and dominate each other. But like, I also think that the majority of people don't matter. Because a lot of people just, their opinions just kind of shift based on the information. Like, like a good example of this in Atlas Shrugged is, what's his name? Reardon, Hank Reardon. During his speech, when he's in court, when they're going after him for, I'm rereading this book.
What, the steal?
Yeah. Yeah. They're going after, I think it was because he sold his Reardon steal to somebody, and it didn't follow the, whatever stupid law that they had where, you know, the government kind of dictated who you could and couldn't sell to and how much of it. And, you know, he had this like really powerful speech and all the NPCs were like cheering and clapping, you know, because they were moved by his speech. But at the end of the day, like they shifted based on him being persuasive, but yet, you know, like nothing changed as a result of that, because they probably just went back to kind of sucking the dick of the tyrants, you know, because that was just like, and I just think that's how it works. Like, I don't think the majority of people matter. They just kind of do whatever the TV tells them to, and they believe it, but the people there are a handful of people that do matter, that do think critically and do take action and try to influence things, the people that actually are productive members of society and are more than just being, you know, kind of mindless wage slaves that consume Netflix when they get uncomfortable about something. Mm-hmm. And I think those are the people that do matter, should, like, you know, when somebody goes out and has some sort of stupid opinion on it, like, why should you trounce them? It's for everybody watching. You want the retard to be even more retarded. You just want to show everybody else that they're retarded. Like, this is what I try to do with Mike Brock, and I think I was successful at, is like, you know, the majority of people listening to that, whether they're NPCs or whether they're informed people that have the abilities, their brains, they're gonna come to the conclusion that Mike Brock is retarded and he's kind of an asshole and probably a narcissist.
Yeah. He did look like a retard trying to have like a serious debate with a cartoon character guy online.
Well, I'm a credentialed journalist.
Well, obviously, no, he didn't have the credentials to have the debate with you.
No, he didn't have the credentials, but he thought he did, and that's where he looked really stupid. I proved to the world that smoking cigarettes and reading Ayn Rand makes you smarter than a sophisticated philosopher.
You've definitely done that.
Yeah.
But so, hey, do you think, like, when you're trolling these retards, right? Like, I don't know, like, how to explain it, but, like, when they took bullying out of school, like, people became softer and, like, more retards were allowed to proliferate because normally they would be bullied into not being fucking retarded, right? And, like, I feel like the same dynamic is happening online. And, like, since you have this generation of people that grew up without being bullied, they feel like they're valid, like, with their opinions and shit, even if their opinions are completely fucking retarded. And then when you mock them, they fucking cry and piss their pants and then try to get you deplatformed and censored. Like, what do you think about this? Like, do you think, like, we should be savagely trolling people and bullying people still, or what?
Well, I don't know if they really ever did take bullying out of school. I think they just tried to enforce a monopoly on bullying. I think the bullies today are more so like the teachers and the institutions with a lot of power and control. I think there's a tremendous amount of bullying, and we saw this a lot during the COVID lockdowns. But I don't know. I mean, I think things should be done ethically, and I think just like trying to just like I don't really ascribe to what's his face, the guy that wrote Rules for Radicals,
Saul Alinsky.
Yeah, Saul Alinsky. I don't really ascribe to that, like, because I'm not trying to dominate and control people. You know, it's like that's not on my agenda. I'm trying to make a point and just communicate a point. I see things that I think are true. I see things that I think are false, and I try and comment on it. But I don't really believe in just like this great enemy that I'm trying to battle against or being on a moral crusade. Like I'm just trying to live my life the way I want to. And I want to create a better future for my kid. And I think that there's like these things that need to happen. And I think like one of the big problems that is causing so much dysfunction is that people are so hyper focused on trying to control each other. And I think like the real revolution in the way that you counter that is by encouraging people to actually have a little bit of self-dignity and so that's more of like what I'm trying to do versus trying to destroy my opponent. And like the people that I'm making fun of and you know, commenting on and reporting on, I'm more interested in the audience than I am them at the end of the day. I don't really care about them. They're not going to change. Mike Brock will have had, he's incapable of self-awareness and self-reflection. And I think he's proved that with his follow-up. Like I don't care about changing him. I care about, you know, trying to encourage everybody that was watching that
to not be like Mike.
Well, to not be like Mike, but just to also like to not take people like Mike seriously. Like I don't think they deserve I just don't think they deserve to be taken seriously at all. Because they're not serious people. They think they're serious people, but they're not serious people. They're people that just, you know, their entire worldview is based on assumption after assumption after assumption. And they think they have legitimacy because of this idea of like, well, this is what the majority believes, and this is what the establishment believes, and it's essentially, you know, the easiest path to kind of accomplish my goals of, you know, whatever it be of dominating, controlling other people. And like I just don't want to dominate and control other people. Like I want to identify other people like me.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, And I think putting this type of energy out there, it does that. It kind of brings people out of the woodwork that resonate with what I'm doing, what I'm saying, that appreciate it. Like, okay, now I have a whole group of people to hang out with at the Bitcoin conference. So instead of being stuck in, you know, compliance culture and having to go through TSA to hear Michael Saylor speak now I have a whole group of people that I can sell non-KYC cigarettes to outside and have a good time. So that's like one of the goals. And then is to just kind of create this this group of like-minded people, but then also to like encourage, because like I like the people that like I care about and that provide value to me or people that I can have a meaningful conversation with.
Yeah.
That I can relate to, that I don't have to be on the defensive, like people that don't look at me like I'm insane. Cause like, I think the majority of people in American society, they think I'm a loon, and I don't really care. Like, cause I just don't like, if you believe what the TV says, I don't really want your wants or need your validation. You can think I'm crazy. I don't care because I'm secure in who I am. Like I don't need your validation. It's just not it's something that's incredibly unimportant to me. Because like this isn't a popularity contest or like I'm just not an insecure person. Like I'm happy with who I am. I'd rather, you know, face adversity to remain who I am unapologetically than you know, to kind of compromise in order to get approval or validation for these people. Because like at the end of the day, like I really do believe the only thing I really have is my mind. In my personality and just that's what makes me unique. And that, I think that's what allows me to be valuable in this world is because of who I am, not because of me compromising to how other people think I should be. Anytime I've been unhappy in my life, it's because I've been living into what other people have
trying to be something you're not, basically to please other people.
Exactly. And I think that's like one of the big issues that we have in society and why we have chronic loneliness and happiness is like everybody's disconnected from each other because they have no idea. They're not even connected to themselves. Like how can you relate to other people if you can't even figure out who you are? Like there's all these identities that are projected on to other people. And like I think the school system, like you're talking about like the need for bullying. I just don't know, really know if there's necessarily a need for bullying because I think a lot of that kind of ends up going sideways because the bullies will be informed by the CIA controlled media and their retarded parents and you generally bullying's built out of like when I was in school, I was kind of the guy that picked on the bullies because they pissed me off.
I get that. And I agree with you. Like I've never liked bullies either, but like when I grew up, like I got in fist fights and shit in school.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And like, I feel like that built character. Totally. And you know, like if I got out of line, somebody kicked my ass. And then like, maybe I thought about it twice instead of doing it again, you know? So like, to me, like, I feel like people are too soft. And like,
yeah, I mean, what you're describing is having an attitude of self-respect. Like, why do you get in a fist fight with somebody? It's because they encroach on you set a boundary with them and they encroach on it in some way. And you tell them to fuck off. And if they don't, then you hold your ground.
Yeah.
Like that's much more of like a defensive kind of attitude. Whereas I think like the term bullying is more so describing an offensive, like let's control other people's behaviors. Which isn't like, I'd rather just like remove myself from the situation. Like I really believe like as a firearm owner, like I really believe in de-escalation as much as possible. And I think like, one of the worst scenarios that I can get into is, like an actual violent confrontation. Like that's not really something I want to, but I have been in quite a few violent confrontations, mostly in school.
I would agree. Like I would try to avoid, like if somebody now, like at 44 years old, if somebody tried to fight me, I would walk away. Like I would, unless like I was cornered and could not avoid it. Like I would totally avoid the fight and lose face or whatever. I don't care. But like, you know, when you're young, you have to like be, I don't know, like willing to like stand your ground and like willing to, you know, get into conflicts, I guess. Like, I think fighting is like an old person is retarded. But then like when you're growing up, like if somebody's trying to mess with you, you got to be able to defend yourself, right?
Totally. Because like, that's what these schools want from people is they want all conflict resolution to be centered around an authority figure. They want the monopoly over that. And I see it as a, I think where we can compromise on this idea or kind of come to an agreement just on the language and the framing of it is like the removal of bullying is more of an attitude of removing people's ability to stand up for themselves, and instead, you know, requires the authority figure to essentially do it for them.
Yeah, like conditions them into helplessness.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think public schools are incredibly harmful. And not a huge fan of them. They're just like they've gotten away from like what's actually like helpful in education. They don't care about education. They care about brainwashing and control over people. I mean, like they don't allow smoking cigarettes. I think that was one big issue. Kids used to be able to smoke cigarettes in high school.
Yeah, I know. We had like at my high school, bro, we had a smoking area.
Yeah.
Which is kind of wild. Like now,
look at how much society has gone downhill since then.
Yeah, I mean, like I would say that like our societal collapse began with banning smoking wherever you please.
Yeah.
Smoking on airplanes and in restaurants and stuff. Like I remember that when I was a little kid, like you could smoke everywhere. I remember like family gatherings where people would be like smoking in the fucking living room and shit. Whereas like now you have to like be like 20 feet from a fucking exit door if you want to smoke a cigarette.
Yeah. I mean, look at literacy rates, how they're just like careening down since they banned smoking. Like it's just, like if you really wanted to extrapolate on, I mean, guess when all the smoking bans started happening?
As I remember, that was probably what, the late 80s, early 90s?
Yeah.
At least in California where I lived.
Yeah, that's when they started to really take off. But it all really started to happen in 1971.
Okay, that's before I was born. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I remember like in, you know, around 1990-ish, let's say, like, they started putting the bans, like the restaurants used to have like a smoking section, right? Like half of the restaurant would be for smokers, half of it would be for non-smokers. And they took out the smoking section. And then, you know, like you used to be able to smoke like indoors at, you know, bars and stuff like that. And they took it out of bars. Like the 90s is really when I remember like those bans kind of going into place.
Yeah. I mean, it's a slippery slope. They start with segregation and they end with complete bans.
Yeah.
It's why we got to hold our ground and just not give these people any ground because you know, first they'll be like, oh, you can only smoke here. And the next thing you know, they're like, oh, we're outright banning smoking. But yeah.
Another thing that's fucked up is like, okay, remember they banned smoking everywhere. So people invented these fucking vapes. I think vapes are gay. But like the reason they invented the vapes was because they're not smoke. So you could like smoke them inside and shit without disturbing people. And now they're fucking banning the vapes everywhere.
Well, they should ban the vapes because nobody wants to get this like fruity sticky juice blown in their face. That shit's gross. Like you want real American homegrown tobacco smoke. grown and blown in your face. Like, that's to be gay. Like, if you want to be gay, I'm joking about banning vapes, but like, yeah, people should have the right to be gay if they want to. I find it kind of annoying, but like, it's not like the end of the world if somebody blows their Fruity Pebble sticky juice in my face. I mean, that's the other thing that's really weird about vaping is, why did they make the names of all the vape juice like the gayest things possible?
I don't know. I think it's China.
Yeah.
Doesn't all the vape juice like come from fucking China?
I don't know. I can't say I'm super familiar with the vape juice supply chain. I just have never really engaged in that. I don't know. Maybe I've hit somebody else's vape, but I've never gone and bought a vape before myself.
Okay.
It's just not what I'm into. Like, it's just not what it's against my religion.
Yeah, I'm not really into it either. I think I went through like a period in like 2010 where I tried to vape for like 6 months to quit smoking cigarettes. And it gave me a weird fucking vape cough. And mm-hmm. then I stopped vaping and that shit went away like after a couple of weeks. And then I was like, dude, that's fucked up. I've never had that from cigarettes. So I'm never going to vape anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just, I don't think it's like a better viable alternative to smoking. Like, it's, I don't know. Vaping's like a scourge, but you know, what else can you expect in a society that it is as silly as ours?
Is outlawing all natural creations of God and replacing them with synthetic fucking alternatives.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, like, they outlaw like weed, and then there's like that fake fucking like weed that they sell like mm-hmm. in the gas station, or you know, they want to outlaw cigarettes, but then they'll give you vapes, or they want to outlaw like vegetables and give you genetically modified food. Like,
yeah.
Those kind of things. Like, I feel like the march of technology has gotten to the point where they're just trying to like make man-made creations out of like self-worship and idolatry
mm-hmm.
and displacing like the natural creations that already exist that are better for us.
Yeah, and it's all at the expense of the individual too. It's whether you believe in God or not. I mean, I think there's like, what, you know, what should religion be about? I think it should be about power, empowering the individual, not necessarily identifying a collective to control, and getting people to turn their brains off. Even though that's what a lot of religious people do. Like, there's a lot of good religious people out there that really do. They're very, very impressive human beings, because what their religion does for them is it actually bolsters their sense of self rather than destroying their sense of self. And I got a lot of respect for people like that. But there's a lot of people that just, you know, you kind of use religion to turn their brains off. And it's just like, it was hilarious during COVID because you had all these Christians running around freaking out about like wearing their mask and getting vaccinated. And it's like, you guys believe that if you die, you're going to heaven. So why are you afraid to die? Like,
that's like a funny one.
Like, I mean, if anything, the argument would be, like, you don't want to kill other people because they haven't accepted Christ yet. And you want them to live a little bit longer for the opportunity to accept Christ.
But like a Christian who wasn't willing to take the vax, isn't that proving that they're willing to die? Like, if the vax was supposedly like the cure and they were like, no, I don't want the cure, I'm just going to take my chances with the fucking virus. I mean, in retrospect, we know the vax wasn't the cure and it was probably way more harmful than just catching the cold. But
I don't think there were people that were like, I'm not taking the vaccine because I'm like suicidal and want to die and go see Jesus. Like, I mean, maybe there were like some old people living in retirement homes that were like that.
I think it was more like a lot of the Christian people that I know that didn't want to take the vax were thinking it was because it was like the mark of the beast or some shit.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the Christian people that I know that didn't take the vax, they were rooted in this moral philosophy that, that people should have the right to refuse medical treatment.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, bodily autonomy is non-negotiable. Like, I'm not going to let you force shit into me that I don't want in me.
Yeah.
Like, sorry. And if you try, then I'm going to have to violently resist because I'm not going to go along with that shit.
Yeah, and I think that they have, like, enough historical context to understand, like, how dangerous that type of thinking is. And, you know, like, whenever you have a kind of a, I don't know, it's hard saying Christians in general because there's so many different sects and belief systems. And then even within those different sects and belief systems, there's a lot of different opinions. Like, you could argue that Mormons are Christians.
Were there like Buddhists that were like in mass trying not to take the vax, or like Hindus, or like a different religion, Muslims or whatever? Like,
I imagine there probably was. I mean, there's so many different types of people out there, with differing opinions within the groups. And it's just like one of the problems is, like, you know, like one of the themes that I've been seeing a lot amongst different Bitcoin groups is people going and attacking the Jews.
Oh yeah, the Monero community's got that shit going on too right now.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people in the Monero community that are saying things that are upsetting other people in the community, to put it nicely.
Yeah. And like, if I believe people have the right to be, like, the term anti-Semitic is kind of I don't love it because it's just like kind of like a buzzword that is used to, like, I think there's criticisms of Jews that are fair. It's like, hey, you're annoying. Yeah. But like, part of the reason why I like the Jews, or like, again, you know, it's kind of problematic just like having this broader category of Jews, because there's so many different types of Jews. You know, not all Jews work in Hollywood. Some are accountants, some are lawyers.
Even on this, like, shit with Palestine, like, they're kind of split. Like, there's Jews protesting the other Jews that are like pro-war and shit. Like,
yeah,
you can't. Yeah, I agree that you can't make a blanket statement.
Yeah, I don't really like it. I mean, it's like once you start doing that, you say the Jews suck. Well, there's not really even a consensus on what Judaism is, because there's so many different sects of Judaism, just like there are Christianity. You could say all Christians suck, but you could be talking about, like, you could be talking about charismatic Christians. You could be talking about prosperity gospel Christians. You could be talking about Orthodox Christians, but like, they're all different. You could be talking about Mormons. Mormons say that they're Christians. Most Christians don't think Mormons are Christians, but Mormons say they're Christians.
Like, yeah, some Christians don't think Catholics are Christians.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's...
I don't know. Like, the Jew thing is a little weird, though, because it's not just a religion, right? It's like an ethnicity, too. So, like, there are, like, just, like, Jews that aren't religious at all. They're just, like, people, but they just happen to be ethnically Jewish. So, like, it's a little different than Christianity in that sense, because, like, in Christianity, all those people are religious in one shape or another.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, you can be Jewish and, like, you know, be a science-minded, you know, atheist kind of guy that doesn't believe in any creator or any of that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, it's just when you label groups, and I mean, thank God that the world hasn't determined that Americans are collectively guilty for all the actions that our government has participated in, because I'd be kind of fucked. You know, and I don't think the government really represents me or what I believe. And I've structured my life trying to oppose all these awful things that they're doing.
Yeah, I think the world recognizes that the people aren't going along with, or the people don't agree with what's happening.
But, you know, I think there's kind of like this response of, like, I've kind of studied a little bit, not as well as I could have, so I wouldn't claim to be an expert, but my theory on, you know, a lot of the anti-Jew attitudes is like, you know, these Bitcoiners, these people in the counterculture, they come to this realization that history and the way that we're taught it is bullshit. And they're looking for an explanation for why. And there have been Jewish individuals that have been very influential in the way that history is formed and taught. And there are people with incentives and the state of Israel to control things in a certain way and to control narratives. But like at the end of the day, that doesn't reflect an entire group of people.
I agree completely with that. But at the same time, like our Bitcoin, Monero, like our struggle is against the financial system as it exists right now, mm-hmm. which is based on usury. And, you know, I don't want to say like all Jews are like Shylocks or whatever, but when you look at like who's running central banks and like the Rothschilds and this kind of stuff, there are a section of Jewish society that are doing that shit.
Yeah. But there's also a lot of Jewish Bitcoin podcasters.
Yeah, man. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't like blanketly being negative towards a whole group of people. Hey, we're going on 2 hours and 20 minutes, man. I know I only booked you for an hour and a half. If you want, we can call it quits. Or if you want, we can keep going.
Yeah, I gotta get to some stuff. I'm behind schedule. I gotta finish reading Atlas Shrugged by next Wednesday. So that I'm on vacation right now from 40 hours of Bitcoin podcast a week.
I was going to say, bro, this probably ate into like your podcast schedule for today.
That's okay. I enjoyed it. I appreciate the conversation. Hopefully your listeners found something useful out of this, and it gave me some entropy. We all need entropy in our lives. And so I think it's willing, like, I like getting out of the bubble, the Bitcoin bubble from time to time. It's enjoyable. And I'm glad there's people out there actually doing things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's cool. That's way cooler than HODL, NGU, compliance is defiance culture.
Yeah, I agree completely. And like, even though I'm critical to Bitcoin, man, like I would love to see it succeed still.
Yeah, I think there's fair criticisms. I guess my argument, and I think where we differentiated on it, is I just don't think the battle's lost.
Yeah.
I think there's still a reason to be here fighting the battle. And that might be a bad characterization of what I'm describing, what you believe, because it sounds like you still see value in it. It's just I see
value in it, but like I'm not gonna like put my time or energy or resources into promoting Bitcoin so much anymore.
You prefer to listen to 40 hours of Monero podcast instead of 40 hours of Bitcoin podcast?
Yeah, I would say so. I just think Monero is a lot more interesting, like right now.
Sure.
Like the stuff that's going on, like as far as like in the community, like the stuff that they're working on and like development, I see just like more progress. It's happening at a faster pace. I agree with the direction it's going in. There's just, you know, stuff that I couldn't say the same for Bitcoin. Like I kind of think like Bitcoin Core is not really doing anything. They're kind of gatekeeping. The whole consensus process, like there's been meaningful changes that should have made it into Bitcoin that had to go into Monero instead. And yeah, so I don't know. Like I'm keeping tabs on it. I will observe from afar.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool, man. Well, I'm glad you're thinking for yourself and using your brain, because that's more important than having the right opinions.
Yeah. And opinions, you know what they say.
If there is such thing as the right opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. All right. Well, I'm about to piss my pants. So thanks for having me on the show, and let's keep on talking in the future.
Indeed, brother. Thanks for coming on. Like it was awesome. People check out the Bitcoin Bugle, and yeah, talk soon.
Talk to you later.
Take care.